Thanks, James. It's Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, today was a big day for Chicago as the Inspector General's report on the Laquan McDonald case was finally made public. This was something that really came out of Mayor Lightfoot's push in City Council this summer to be more transparent in government. Of course, that Inspector General's report was hidden, if you will, by the former administration. We'll talk that, plus Strike NATO and all the strike news that you need as a strike date is set for 8 days from today. Heather Sharone is the managing editor at The Daily Line. You can find all that information about The Daily Line online and subscribe to their newsletter, which is a must-read every morning on Chicago County and Springfield news. Heather, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here, Justin.
All right, so let's get right into this. The Inspector General's report, which, you know, obviously everybody wanted, was a little bit of a letdown because most of the stuff has already been FOIA'd at some point or another, and the city's been sued for all the information.
Right. So this was just the reports that the Inspector General, Joseph Ferguson, put together at the request of both the police department and what was then the Independent Police Review Authority, which is now the civilian oversight accountability agency. But there were a couple of nuggets in there that were news to me and a lot of my colleagues. One of them, it was just sort of the sheer scope of what Joseph Ferguson looked at. He investigated 15 officers in addition to Jason Van Dyke, who, of course, was the one who shot and killed Laquan McDonald back in 2014. And he recommended some form of discipline for all of them, up to and including firing. And, of course, only four officers were ever fired, in addition to Jason Van Dyke, who, of course, is serving a nearly seven-year prison sentence.
And there were some recommendations in the report of some high-ranking officers as well. And this was really just about really sort of all across suggesting cover-up and or at least at the least not doing their job.
Correct. And what really struck me, and I didn't know this before, was that one of the supervising officers, a lieutenant, was accused of, and Ferguson found evidence to suggest that he destroyed handwritten reports that recorded statements made the night Laquan McDonald was killed by civilian witnesses. And then he recreated those reports, but didn't tell the officers who had created those reports in the first place. And then there were three other reports that were lost at some point during the investigation, and Ferguson did not hold back. He said that that created the appearance that the police department was essentially manipulating evidence to reach a conclusion that they had already determined was the one that they were going to find.
Right.
So that officer resigned before Ferguson could complete his investigation. However, I think that that raises a significant question about sort of not only what the police department did when they were charged with investigating the shooting, but sort of what sort of the pattern and practice is, when shootings like this happen, which are, of course, all too frequent.
Do you expect any sort of movement now that this report has been made public, or is this really just the aftermath and here's what we investigated before and it's almost like a piece for the museum?
Well, it could be. Well, what I was reminded of while reading this is that, of course, this happened not while Eddie Johnson was police superintendent, as he is now, but he was a high-ranking deputy chief at the time. And Mayor Lori Lightfoot has said repeatedly that she would be meeting with Eddie Johnson in the coming weeks, now that the summer is over, to sort of, you know, sit down and talk with him and to evaluate whether she planned to keep him on as superintendent. And I think that this complicates that because the police department comes off, really somewhat of a mess when, you know, they had this, you know, shooting, which we've all seen, you know, far too many times. And this really, these reports really sort of help piece together what happened behind the scenes away from prying eyes. And I don't doubt that Mayor Lightfoot will be asked, you know, what has changed so that this won't happen again.
Right. It is, I mean, it's damning in the sense that the superintendent, who was a deputy at the time, had seen the tape and didn't think anything was wrong with it. And you got to assume at some point, you're absolutely right, that, you know, it's not a given that he's going to continue as Chicago superintendent under Lightfoot, and this doesn't help with public confidence.
That's right, and I think that that is a really good thing to think about, that these there are several officers who were recommended for discipline who are still members of the department. There were four officers who were fired by the police board. They're suing to get their jobs back. The Fraternal Order of Police considers this whole thing just a complete and total just insult to injury, and believes these reports that were released today should have never been, you know, should never have been released to the public in
That's
the first place.
So the FOP is against the idea of this even being given to the public. They want this to continue to be reports that are only given to the departments and not for public viewing.
That's correct. They believe that it violates the, you know, privacy clauses in the police department's contract, and it will be, you know, I'm certain, a really point of tough negotiation if there are ever actual negotiations over the police contract, which has, you know, been expired for more than 2 years. And sometimes I feel like a little bit like a crazy person, you know, with all of these other strikes going on, you know, waving her hands and saying, wait, the police haven't gotten any sort of raise in 2 years. They've been working without a contract for that, you know, duration. And eventually that bill is going to come due, and the city is going to have to figure out a way to reach an agreement with the union, which has been highly, highly critical of the mayor.
Well, I mean, the mayor ran, Mayor Lightfoot ran a campaign on transparency and trying to open up these things, even talking about, you know, the McDonald investigation. It would be really tough if you went into negotiations with the FOP and came out of it saying, sorry, my bad, we're not going to release these anymore. Right?
Absolutely. And now these reports will only be released when there is a case that results in a death or felony charges and is of high public interest. So really the only other case that this would apply to would be the David Koshman case. And of course, he was the man who was, you know, killed after a fight with former Mayor Richard M. Daley's nephew. And that is still the subject of litigation. So those reports are still protected by that sort of ongoing litigation. So this isn't going to happen very often.
Is that going to be, Heather, is that going to be the argument? Is there going to be a public argument about whether or not the case is big enough to have a report be released? Is that what we're going with this?
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. And it will be an interesting push and pull, especially as, you know, the mayor tries to navigate sort of all of the different currents, you know, pushing and pulling on issues like this.
What blows my mind about the whole thing, and you tell me if it's in there because I didn't read the whole piece, but...
You didn't read all 60,000 pages?
I wish I had more time. I needed more time this afternoon. I had to go to Mariano's and get a sandwich. All right. Here's my question. What about the Burger King tape? There's the one thing, and I know that I don't want to sound facetious about the whole thing, but there was all this talk about the missing Burger King tape and whether or not there was a cover-up, and it never actually gets any oomph, any play. I feel like it just kind of got glossed over in the trials and never really gets mentioned. It's just sort of, we're supposed to buy that, well, it was a computer glitch. Does that come up at all in this investigation?
It didn't come up within any of the discipline recommended for officers. So at no point did Joe Ferguson say, look, I found evidence that somebody went in there and deleted the crucial moments of this tape, which means that, you know, it will continue to be sort of one of those, you know, lingering questions, because we only saw the reports that resulted in discipline. There are other reports that we won't see, I'm sure, and who knows what's contained in those thousands of pages.
There are, you know, we'll hear a lot from the FOP, we'll hear from the mayor on this. When we talk about some of the activists that had struggled to be able to release this information, and some of the community activists that were instrumental in making sure that Jason Van Dyke had a trial and it was stayed in the public light. Are they responding to this? Do they feel at all that justice has been served and that this is a good thing that this came out?
Well, I know that they were in favor of the law being changed, the city code being changed to allow the release of these. I, you know, was so consumed with getting through as many of these reports as I did that I didn't have time to reach out to them. And I'm sure that they're in the same boat, too, trying to figure out what exactly these reports you know, do to sort of build that mosaic of what happened back in 2014, 2015, 2016.
Yeah. Now, is this it? I mean, would this be the end of the Laquan McDonald saga in Chicago? Meaning, you know, justice was served in with the officer, the other officers were acquitted. We have beyond some repercussions about who gets to keep their jobs and who doesn't. Will this be the last we hear of city involvement about this case?
But it's important to remember that without Laquan McDonald's murder, we wouldn't have a consent decree now in place over the Chicago Police Department. And that is really just sort of in the beginning stages of you know, sort of taking root and changing how the police department operates. So that will potentially be a lever for activists and the news media like you and me to sort of get sort of, a look into sort of what the police department is doing and how they're policing. Because there will be regular court, you know, hearings. There'll be regular reports issued about whether the police department is living up to their end of the agreement. And that really will, I truly believe will be the lasting legacy of sort of the political fallout of the Laquan McDonald case. But let's not forget that it was not a coincidence that Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced he would not seek a third term just days before Jason Van Dyke was convicted of second-degree murder in the Laquan McDonald case. Yeah. So this case, you know, might be sort of over in some sense, but it was just, it's impossible to overstate what a dramatic and total, just complete change Chicago politics really, you know, for the foreseeable future.
It ripples throughout Chicago history. All right, so let's talk about the strikes. Let's take a break here. We'll take a break, and Heather Sharon's joining us, managing editor at the Daily Line. She covers all things Chicago County, Springfield, when it comes to politics. And we want to talk about Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Public Schools as they are really on a deadline crunch here with 8 days left before a strike date for the Chicago Teachers in the Chicago Teachers Union. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back with Heather here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Heather Sharon with me. She is the managing editor at the Daily Line. She joins us weekly here on the program to talk about all things Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield politics. And of course, the big story, of course, has to be the Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Public Schools, which don't seem to be anywhere near a contract. And the strike date is set for next week, next Thursday. Heather, today it's even getting strange to me that now it's about policy and maybe policy that doesn't have to do with schools. Affordable housing has crept into one of the things that's on the table.
Right. And the Chicago Teachers Union would argue you're 100% wrong. It is absolutely germane to their contract because they say that there's somewhere in the neighborhood between 16 and 17,000 students who are homeless in Chicago at any given night, on any given night. And that makes it really difficult for them to learn and have a good school experience. It also complicates teachers' lives as well. And let's not forget that over the past, you know, several years, the school district has lost tens of thousands of students. I mean, it's just really, it's dropped dramatically. And the teachers' union argument is, look, we've got to address that by helping our families stay in the city so they don't get pushed out of the city and we see our enrollment decline further.
Yeah, but you and I both know that there's no doubt about that. And that's something that has to be dealt with, not just with the schools, but beyond. Does the mayor have a point to say, I understand that, but this is not the place to have that conversation? It shouldn't be in a contract negotiation for teachers.
And that's sort of where they fundamentally disagree, because not only do the teachers want Mayor Lightfoot to address affordable housing in the contract, they want her to address class sizes, they want her to address staffing levels for nurses and counselors and social workers and librarians, and they see this contract as their best chance to really enact progressive policies that would otherwise stall out. You know, if somebody introduced an ordinance at the city council, it would just sort of linger in limbo forever, and there are plenty of ordinances that are in that exact status right now. So they see that, you know, the contract negotiations are all about leverage, and they see this as sort of crucial to creating a school district that is welcoming and that sort of, you know, is built through the long haul and is a nurturing place for as many students as possible. But again, they're asking a lot, and I think a lot of people are having the same reaction as you are. It's like, well, what does that have to do with school and, you know what I mean, and pencils and that sort of thing? So this is, you know, not unprecedented, but it is unusual that the teachers union has attempted to sort of widen the discussion to these sort of progressive issues.
And you see more often than not that a union, like a teachers union, will just put their lobbying efforts behind something to pass outside of the contract when it comes to affordable housing or other social issues. That's, I think, the more appropriate way, I guess, as weird as that sounds, the more appropriate way to do politics as opposed to trying to put it into a contract that it is really just a contract with the teachers. That's the problem. I don't even say, so are they asking for writing to say that we want your affordable housing policy to be done? Like, how do you get that to be a part of a contract and also have it be binding law?
Right, and able that they would be able to take the city potentially to court over not fulfilling those requirements. It's definitely an interesting sort of tactic. However, you know, the teachers union, it pushed in 2012 for things that were outside sort of what, you know, wonks will refer to as core economic issues like pay and benefits, and they made some headway there. And I think that emboldened them to say, look, that, you know, we haven't been successful in pushing stuff through the city council, although that might change because now the city council is far more progressive than it had been. Well, we haven't gotten anything through Springfield because the, you know, state was in a massive budget impasse for 2 years. So, you know, they're sort of saying, well, we've got to sort of take our fate in our own hands and do what we can to advocate for what we believe our students need. But I think you're right in that the two sides are very, very far apart. And with 8 days to go, I would imagine that a lot of parents are getting nervous because at the same time the teachers go on strike, at the same time the park district workers who are represented by SEIU will also go on strike, which means there won't be any strike day camp like the one I went to back in 1987.
All right. We were just talking about that. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a big issue and I think that puts parents who obviously are very concerned about what's going to happen with school. It makes them double concerned that there's no backup plan.
Right. And that, of course, will hurt, you know, low-income and working-class parents hardest because, you know, if you are a middle-class family, chances are you've got a little bit more resources, maybe some family nearby, you know, you can sort of try to make it work. But if you're sort of, you know, sort of just skating by, you know, even the best-resourced parents sometime, you know, something like this can throw, you know, your entire, you know, world just into chaos.
Right. And I want to make it clear, you know, I don't necessarily think it's a bad concept, the concept to want to have a stand or take a stand when it comes to affordable housing policy. I also believe that the Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Public Schools, they both are controlling their own narrative, and I'm having a harder and harder time at this chair and this show to understand what's fact and what's fiction. And that's what happens as we get closer to a strike date where the narrative is trying to be controlled and your sources are partisan in the way that you don't know if that's really what they want or if that's, you know, I never trust when one side is telling me what the other wants.
Well, we've even gotten to a point where we're now arguing over how many pages each side has presented of contract proposals to each other. You know, Mayor Lori Lightfoot was like, look, here's a 50-page proposal, and you haven't gotten back to us. And then, you know, the teachers union fires off a tweet saying, we gave you a 60-page proposal, you know, 4 weeks ago. And so there's definitely been sort of a lot of back and forth and jockeying for that position. And right now, a new addition to City Hall is a sign outside the mayor's office on the fifth floor that is counting the days from which they say that they have gotten no proposals from the teachers union, which, of course, the teachers union says is blatantly false. But so it's not only a battle of wits, but of poster boards and graphic design.
That's a great way to put it. Well, it's not a laughing matter. We're getting closer and closer to this. Do you assume at this point that it's going to be, they're going to be going through the weekend and pushing to get this done? Or is it going to be stay as far away from the table as possible as a ploy?
Oh, well, that's interesting. I'm not sure. You know, it's all sort of negotiation strategy. I got to say that I perhaps am a cynic, but, I never expected a deal to be done much before 11:45 on October 16th. That was what happened in 2016 when a strike was averted, and they both sides negotiated up until the last minute in 2012 right. before the seven-day strike. So I just figure that as a reporter, I'm not lucky enough to get a resolution to this during, business hours.
Right,
that's not how it works for me.
They're going to get you at 11:59 on Wednesday, so
right.
Burn the midnight oil. Heather Sharon, managing editor at The Daily Line, which covers politics. Get their newsletter. Comes to you every morning, early in the morning. Heather, great to talk to you. Talk next week.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. Well, there you go. More. It's absolutely true that this is going to be a 24/7, probably down to the wire negotiation here in Chicago. It's Extension 720. Stay with us.